but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
One of those just really good days. Good vibes in the air today. Judah Newby with you. Thursday edition, Bald-Faced Truth, 750 The Game, BFT Radio Network. Thanks to Mike Hass joining us in Hour 2. Beavs legend, College Football Hall of Famer. You can find that podcast if you missed it. But NFL getting underway. A lot of news in training camps. What are my Seahawks up to? What are some of the national perspectives on them? Packers as well. Niners. What's going on? Justice Mosqueda. First time getting to catch up with him. Local guy, he's in the area. He's got a background in data and analytics and scouting. He's consulted for some NFL teams along the way. He writes right now about Green Bay Packer football at Acme Packing Company, and he joins us now. Justice, thanks for making time, man. How are you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Number one, how long have you been covering Packers at Acme Packing Company?
Oh, man. So I used to freelance for like Bleacher Report and stuff like that. And then I kind of got into the scouting side of football, was the director of analytics for the company that ran scouting for the XFL, did that 2019, 2020. And then there was a pandemic. So we were all out of jobs after that. And then after that, I kind of went back to writing. And started covering the Green Bay Packers, you know, NFL draft, because obviously that's kind of in my bloodline at this point. And then just the NFL at large, too. So, yeah, since 2022, I want to say.
How'd you become a Packer fan?
A troll job from my father. So my grandma on my mom's side, my mom's mom, was a Denver Broncos fan, right? Big John Elway. All that stuff. That Super Bowl that the Packers faced off against the Broncos, my dad thought it would be a funny bit to buy me a Brett Favre jersey when she was visiting with us. And I guess it just kind of stuck. I mean, someone gives you a Brett Favre jersey and you know, out here, you're from Portland too. Yeah. Like, the Packers were on the TV all the time in that, you know, afternoon slot and stuff like that on Fox growing up. So it's not like they were an out-of-market team, but, like, the Packers still kind of have this national branding. And I grew up in Hood River, you know, an hour out from Portland. So I felt like we always had this, like, tension between Portland and Seattle. So I never really sold myself on being the whole Seahawks fan type of thing. So I guess I just rode it out with the Packers.
That's phenomenal. So you're a Hood River kid. I'm a McMinnville kid growing up and basically became a Seahawks fan for the inverse, right? They were always on TV and gravitated to them. My brother and my dad are Niner fans. But my brother did not want me to be a Niner fan with him. He said, find your own team. So that's how I became a Seahawks fan.
He called dibs.
And now he doesn't even care about the Niners, you know? So, you know, it's funny how that works. The Dennis Erickson 98 Seahawks. That's the first real team. Vinny Testaverde, QB sneak at the Meadowlands. He was down at the 1 yard line, and we didn't have instant replay yet. So they ruled it a touchdown. Broke my little heart. The way I remember it was a playoff game, but in retrospect, it was just like a Week 14 game. We were still in the AFC at that point, you know. So, but that's it. What's one of your first? I guess the Super Bowl I guess that would have been the 97 season Super Bowl with Packers Broncos. Is that some of the earliest memories you have of watching Packer games, or what are the, you know, Packer playoff memories aside from 2003 and 2014 come to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean all of those. I mean, like, if you told me the first game I remember, like, front to back, was the, you know, Favre's Pops dying, right? Yeah. And then him playing the Raiders the next day and all that stuff. Because you had the whole news cycle of, you know, is he going to play? Is he not? All that stuff. And he's like, my dad would want me to play, all that. So, yeah, I mean, probably around that range is probably when I could tell you, you know, everything that happened with the Packers from that point forward. That's really when I started to get, you know, the sickness and just really following the NFL and college football and all that stuff.
Now, Bears got to be number one. But how high do the Seahawks rank on Packer hatred?
It's up there, man. Yeah. Like, the Bears thing is just like giving a swirly to a little brother all the time, right? Like, not really that big of a threat. Like, anytime there's any heartbreak, it's always on the Bears side, at least in my lifetime. But it's like the playoff losses, the big game, like the fail Mary, all that stuff. Like, it's like Seattle, the Niners, like Kaepernick went crazy both times that they played him in the playoffs. We've, you know, Mike Pettine couldn't stop inside run game under Kyle Shanahan, all that stuff. And then the Giants, because I think people kind of forget that the Packers were very heavy favorites to beat the New York Giants both of the times that they ended up going on those playoff runs and beating Tom Brady for the Super Bowl. So, you know, one of those years, I believe, was the 15-1 team that the Packers had, and they ended up losing in the divisional round.
It was 2011 season,
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously you have the, you know, Brett Favre's last game in Green Bay, Tom Coughlin's face just being bright red, all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, as far as the division goes, you know, the Lions are a new thing. The Bears have never really been a threat in my lifetime. The Vikings, it gets a little bit more back and forth, especially since, like, it's a retirement home for former Packers players, right? Whether it's, you know, Greg Jennings, Aaron Jones, Brett Favre, like, they just get so many of our guys on the back end. I'm surprised Jaire Alexander isn't a Viking at this point. definitely Giants, Seahawks, Niners, like, the most heartbreaking losses that I can remember are more associated with those teams than the division rivals.
Well, I brought up 03. That would probably be some of my early heartbreak, too. I see Al Harris in my dreams sometimes.
We're gonna score,
dude. You can't make this up, right? Not to bet. And there you go, another Packer Seahawk and Matt Hasselbeck, and obviously, you know, Mike Holmgren and everything there. So I'm super glad to connect with you and talk in your local. You've got 31,600 followers on X, the Everything app, at Jumosk, JUMOSQ, which is always gets a laugh out of me. Who's the dog in your profile picture here?
It's a chihuahua with a cigarette, and I liked it, so I took it.
And then you got the Will Howard slide, you know, a second late at Autzen last year.
Of course.
You are a Duck.
Oregon, undefeated in the Big Ten, has never lost a conference game.
That's right.
Ever. Don't let anyone forget that.
I do want to.
The playoffs, that's a postseason exhibition. Don't worry about that.
I do want to unlock your Ducks takes here coming up shortly, too. How'd you build such a big following in the NFL and in football in general? And you mentioned your kind of data and scouting background. I asked selfishly, too, because I wanted to get to know you a little bit.
Honestly, like, I just try to learn as much as I possibly could. I had a couple injuries in high school that kind of held me back from being on the field, so I had a lot of free time. I don't have any of these delusions that I was going to go play college football. I was a 5'9 center playing in an air raid offense in high school.
Nice.
It was not going to happen for me. So
at Hood River?
At Hood River. Oh. Yeah, we weren't very good at the time. We've gotten a lot better since then.
Sweet.
So I just kind of tried to, like, I really liked it. My dad played football. I loved being around the team and things like that. I loved watching the games, and I knew that, you know, there was just more things that I could learn about the sport. So I just try to consume as much as I could, you know, going to coaching clinics, things like that, getting into coaching, working with high school kids, done that a couple of times. So that was just kind of my path. And then obviously I came around when the blogosphere was a little bit more present, right? So people were checking out websites that weren't just on social media, right? I feel like it's kind of been replaced by social media now. Now you just, you know, you'll follow an account on IG or account on X or whatever. That kind of replaced the blogosphere. But I was writing, did a bunch of analytics stuff, actually consulted with a couple NFL teams pretty early on in my career over some of the combine measurables things that I think have now been, like, widespread in the NFL. I don't think it was because of me. They didn't listen to me the first time around, I can tell you that. But I did take their money. And then kind of, you know, some of your peers go into scouting and things like that. You start building up sources. You can bounce around ideas, get more information, those type of things. And I think it just kind of like builds on top of each other. I talk about the game a little bit differently. I know it's July 24th right now, so we just got out of list season, right, where people are just, hey, man, how about we rank every NFL quarterback and we just talk about that for an entire month? That stuff has never been really that interesting to me. I'd rather spend my time on something that I can take away a grander lesson about the sport and use that moving forward. So that's just kind of like the approach, I guess, that I take to the game.
Let's talk some ball. I will start with some of the news today. The Justin Fields injury, who the heck knows exactly timeline or what it is. But I am fascinated with Aaron Glenn. You know, I'm pulling for that to work. I thought Robert Saleh did a fine job. I thought he kind of got shafted midseason there. I don't know what the potential of that team was going to be last year, but I want the Aaron Glenn thing to work with the New York Jets. You know, Justin Fields injury aside, and if you have a thought on what his potential would be in that offense, are the Jets just kind of capped by their ownership? They can only be so good as maybe like a 9 or a 10 win team, or is there a version of a team like the New York Jets that has a ceiling that's higher than that if the coach really hits, and obviously if the quarterback hits as well?
Yeah, there's some interesting things with the Jets, right? Because, you know, there was all that reporting that, you know, Woody Johnson's son, right, who is the owner, and I believe he's like playing tennis at like Harvard or something right now, was like involved in like free agency and just kind of the general conversations in the room.
Yeah.
And would like look up Madden ratings for like players and things like that. So who knows how much of that is actually true, but the fact that it was out there, I think that was reported by ESPN.
Yeah.
So that's,
Brick.
You know, the NFL is about to buy 10% of ESPN. That's a league partner at right. this point. Right.
Right.
The fact that stuff gets reported, not a great sign. Plus, you know, you have right after the end of the season, I believe the Jets did some staffing cuts and stuff like that for like the non football people, like the game ops people and stuff like that. So to question ownership, probably fair at this point. I do say, like, once you make the bet, we're going all in with Rodgers, we're signing his players, we're trading draft picks for 1 year of Davante Adams, we're signing Alan Lazard, right? We're bringing his former offensive coordinator that he loved, Nathaniel Hackett, into the room and all that stuff, and it breaks wrong, I think it's hard to win that locker room back, right? So I understand the direction that they moved in, even though Saleh ultimately was a defensive coordinator, that's his background, and the defense wasn't bad, right? But I still understand, like, locker room wise, why you would want to change over. And to your point, like, Aaron Glenn, everything that I've heard about Aaron Glenn is just like almost some of the cliche, like, leader of men type of things. Like, you're really hiring him to be the guy who runs your organization. It's not because he's running the defense super well. I don't even think he's going to end up calling plays in New York. I believe that was reported. Like, they want him to be kind of that Dan Campbell guy, right? And that's the tree that he's coming from. So I do understand sort of that moving in that direction when you probably had at least some measure of a locker room problem coming after the disappointment of the Aaron Rodgers saga.
Rodgers in Pittsburgh. Obviously, you've got a deep knowledge base of this human, of this quarterback. You know, what do you think? I mean, just open that. Arthur Smith, DK Metcalf, Aaron Rodgers. I like some of the O-line pieces when healthy. What do you think of that fit?
I don't know, man. It's what a weird situation. And the fact that he's coming out and he's saying, you know, yeah, this is probably the last one, right? I mean, this has been a guy who, historically, you just look at like his time in Green Bay around the draft, he would, you know, or at the end of the season, it would be like, hey, I don't know if that was the last one or not. Let's, you know, try to leverage the situation in however way I can. In New York, right? He's like, oh, I'm not going to, I'm actually going to be in Egypt for a little bit, so I'm not going to be showing up to mandatory minicamp or anything like that. With the Steelers, he waits to sign until after OTAs are done, basically voluntary practices, padless practices. So he goes to Pittsburgh, and he's like, yeah, this is probably it. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, all right, you got DK, but I don't think anyone's looked at the receivers other than DK. Like, it's Robert Woods, who is a punt returner at this point for the Houston Texans before he got hurt. Calvin Austin is very small. Scotty Miller, I guess they're hoping Roman Wilson becomes something. Ben Skoranek, who, you know, was kind of like a wide receiver who at times would, like, play fullback positions and stuff for the Rams. Like, they're not bad guys, but I also don't see a wide receiver two on the team. And I don't think DK is Devontae, with all due respect. Like, Devontae, you could throw out those RPOs, those, like, now screens and stuff like that, where it's, hey, he's one-on-one and the guy's pressed off. I'm just going to throw the ball to Devontae, and we're going to see what Devontae can do with it. I don't think DK is that guy. I mean, his whole thing is, you know, build-up speed, you know, down the field and all that stuff. I mean, you guys are Seahawks fans. Guys know.
He's not a change of direction guy. You know, he's...
No. Turns like a boat.
Put your foot in the ground and go. Now, he can go, obviously. But yes. It is an odd fit, and certainly not a Devontae clone, to say the least. Especially for Rodgers, who's like, he seems like he's such a chemistry guy, right? It took him a while with Garrett Wilson, right? It seemed to even, and Garrett Wilson just got paid. Everybody believes in the talent, but it is fascinating. You think it's deep down? Do you think it's the last ride for Rodgers this year?
I think it might be, because I don't know who the hell else would have signed him this year.
Right.
Right. So. Right. I mean, the only alternative that I can think of is he does well enough to warrant more playing time in 2026, right? And if that happens, it's probably with the Steelers again. I don't think that he's going to hit free agency. I don't think he wants to be on, what would that be, four teams in 5 years, right? Yeah. I don't think that that's a winning model for a guy that age. Who, again, you said, relies on chemistry. I don't know how many times, you know, toward the end of his Packers career, really – the LaFleur era, he's MFing a tight end for running a wrong route and just dirts the ball into the ground and stuff, or throws the ball away. Like, the amount of dirted balls and throwaways that were, like, not intended at any receiver probably had to be league leading, you know, early on in that LaFleur system switch.
We're talking to Justice Mosqueda, writes about the Packers at Acme Packing Company, and all things NFL. Part two of that conversation is coming up after the break. We'll get his thoughts on the Packers and Seahawks entering this year, and get a Ducks thought from him too in 2025. Judah will be filling in on the Baldface Truth, 750 The Game in the BFT Radio Network.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Going around the NFL with Justice Mosqueda, SB Nation, the Acme Packing Company, all things Green Bay Packers. Part two of our conversation from earlier today. Touched on some things in part one, including the Jets situation, Rodgers with the Steelers, and I asked Justice about his thoughts on his Packers, Jordan Love. Last year, was it truly a down year, and what does he attribute that to?
I don't think he played bad, but I do think that it's like an incomplete because of the injuries. Like, I mean, everyone remembers the knee injury because it happened first thing to start the year. It's a nationally televised game, you know, end of the game in Brazil, all that stuff. But he dealt with four different injuries last season. Right. So I don't know if we really saw him operate comfortably at all. He always seemed pretty like pressure is always a funny thing because you see all these numbers and stuff, right, where it talks about pressure rate. I say this as someone who has worked in analytics and stuff. No one's ever given me a good description on what pressure actually is. So the one thing that I would point to about Love last year is any sort of edge that a defensive lineman got on an offensive lineman, he got really nervous and the feet started sputtering and he would throw off of his back foot and stuff like that. And that's not something that we had seen from him nearly as much before last season. And I do wonder if a lot of that had to do with the fact he's dealing with four different injuries, including a knee injury that he, a pretty significant knee injury that he returned from midseason. Right. So, I'm hoping and still think that, you know, Arrow is going to go up on a guy like that. I think ultimately he's going to end up being kind of like a Matthew Stafford type of a guy who, for the most part, he's going to be dealing from the pocket, operating from the pocket. Not a, you know, Jameis Winston type of risk taker or anything like that, but he's, you know, definitely going to drop his nuts every once in a while and try to make the big home run type of throw. And I think that kind of works in the offense that LaFleur wants to build, where it's definitely more run focused early on in downs, right? Where the defense is at least thinking run, even if we're passing, we're going to be doing it off of hard play action or something like that. We're not going to be in the gun on first down or anything.
Let me get a thought from you about my Seahawks. I generally am able to spin things pretty optimistically, but not like homerish, you know, but I am glass half full with this team, and over unders are like 7.5, around 8. And I'm just like, I don't think that's right. I think 9 or 10 is there, but I'll leave it up to you. How about poke some holes in the Seahawks 2025 edition, obviously in late July. So we'll see what the roster ends up looking like. But if you were to poke holes in it and so I can at least practice some negative capability in my brain, how does this season go wrong for Seattle?
I think there's still some question on the offensive line, right? Obviously, you know, you draft Ray Zabel, you hope that he can figure it out, put him next to Charles Cross, and hopefully you could at least, you know, run behind that left side of the line, right? I'm a big fan of Kenneth Walker. I don't know if I love what they did at quarterback, wide receiver this offseason. Obviously, they had to do something with DK and Geno, whether it was extend them or move on from them to get assets. I don't know if I would have pulled the trigger, particularly on the DK thing. I get maybe the Geno situation, depending how long you think that he's going to be around in the league and stuff like that. But Darnold had some stinkers toward the end of 2024, as someone who was watching Vikings games, delighted that they were collapsing in front of my eyes after they had the water bottle spraying water all over Sam Darnold in the locker room after wins in like week 15. And then by the playoffs, it was like that locker room had completely turned on him from a confidence standpoint. So I think there's definitely some uneasiness from me on the Darnold situation, especially when, you know, JSN and Cooper Kupp, like, they don't both have to play in the slot, right? But they're definitely both better when you get them closer to the tackles, whether they're an outside receiver, but they're an outside receiver who's lined up 5 yards away from a tackle and there's no tight end between them, or they're actually in the slot. I think you just want them inside. And I think that can get congested a little bit, especially when your outside threat is like MVS, which, like, right, he's almost like a sacrificial run deep, we're not going to throw you the ball very many times, but we just need you to take the top off the defense type of guy. I really do like Torrey Horton. I haven't really followed camp very much, so I don't know how well he's doing. Yeah. But I really like Torrey Horton coming out. I think if he would not have been injured coming out of Colorado State, he probably would have been a top 100 pick, and he was picked in the fifth. Plus, the running back, Damian Martinez, from Oregon State, seventh round pick. I thought that was one of the better value selections in the draft. I could not. I even said in some of my draft previews and stuff, I was like, Packers don't need a running back. Damian Martinez can play. The NFL is going to do something really stupid, like let him still be there in the fifth round. And then I'm there in the seventh round. I'm like, did Damian Martinez disappear a person? Like, what is happening? Why is no one taking
it? I completely agree. I was shocked. Yeah, that's wild. Now, before we let you go, you know, two quick things. Who is your most favorite or team that you're looking forward to watch the most in the NFL? That's not the Packers. But who's like the most intriguing? Dude, I just got to watch this team figure out what they're like. I'll give you mine, but I'm curious if we have the same one or not.
Let me look. I can tell you what the opposite of that is.
Oh, sure.
The opposite of that for me is the Washington Commanders. I cannot believe the hype that is around this team right now. Did anyone watch them in the regular season, or we just watched them in the playoffs?
This is
because the playoffs, everyone's like, wow, this team is amazing. All this stuff. Jaden Daniels, like, he's winning me my fantasy league. That's great. Dude, it's Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury there at the end of the day. They really didn't do anything. this offseason. I know they just signed Von Miller. That's great. He's a situational pass rusher. He's not starting for them. That's not even what he did in Buffalo toward the end of the year. There's a long history of teams that look like the Washington Commanders getting hyped because they won a postseason game. And by the way, they got blown off the map against the Philadelphia Eagles, if you guys remember that. And then the next year, this like hype machine gets driven up and expectations just crash immediately. I do not get it with the Washington Commanders. Okay. As far as the team that I'm the most excited to watch this year, Philadelphia's defense is crazy, right?
It is like a unit by unit
Baltimore,
thing too, right?
I just love watching Lamar. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like I love watching Lamar. I think Buffalo is still going to be really good. Like, you know, I'm not really going out on a limb here.
So
right?
What are you
three really good teams?
How about this? Tell me what your Chip, Gino, and Pete. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
What are you thinking here? That would be mine.
Man, I have no. I mean, Chip didn't have the horses, and I don't think that he wanted the horses at UCLA. Right? I don't think he wanted to recruit like he was at in Ohio State or anything like that when he was at UCLA. But what they schemed up was really interesting. With all the unbalanced stuff, they were kind of on the forefront of all that. They pulled a lot of offensive linemen. Like, you would see, like, three guys pulling on the same play. Obviously, they had, you know, a dynamic quarterback, the kid who ended up with the Browns. I'm spacing on his name right now. He still had it when he was in UCLA. It didn't look like the Oregon Zoom offense. We're going no huddle. You know, right. We're going four wide receivers on the field, and we're just trying to run the read option every single play and put your defense in conflict and, you know, have bubble screens. It wasn't all that, but he definitely re-innovated himself. And then he goes to Ohio State, which I think is a perfect spot for him because he comes in with a loaded roster, wins a national championship, gets out before the next recruiting class has to come in, right? And does really well there. Obviously, him and Pete had some crossover playing those games and stuff. It's going to be interesting to see what they do you got Gino, you got Gene T, right? Like, I don't think that offensive line is fixed. I still think their tight end situation is kind of weird because, like, Brock Bowers has to be on the field, but he's not really a tight end. You just, like, want him vaguely lining up in the tight end area and throw him the ball. I don't think that they're going to be a finished product just yet. But, yeah, definitely early on in the season and, like, even preseason games, I'm definitely going to be watching what Chip's doing on the offensive side, at least.
I can't believe that, you know, if this time has flown by. I can't believe we're at the end. But I got to give you your Ducks 2025, thought and prediction. You talk about the Chip UCLA stuff, so what – what is this Dante Will Stein offense going to be here with year four of Lanning?
I still don't know. So, like, Dante Moore, I still haven't seen him, like, actually throw a ball and impress me very much. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic on Dante Moore. Where I'm putting all my stock is Sadiq, the tight end. I love him. They had three NFL tight ends last year, right, with Patrick Herbert, Ferguson, and him, right?
That's
so that was really fun to watch. And then the other guy that I'm putting all my stock in is DK, the wide receiver, five-star kid.
Right.
I have buddies who are in the program and stuff right now, and the one name that keeps coming by is just Ja'Marr Chase. And I'm like, oh, so he's like a young Ja'Marr. And they're like, no, he is Ja'Marr Chase. And I'm like, I don't believe you, but you're getting me really excited right now. So I've set the bar extremely high for an 18-year-old. I can only imagine that I'm going to be disappointed by it, and it's no one's fault other than myself. But yeah, Sadiq, DK, let's just throw the ball every play. Who cares who's at quarterback?
That is sweet. I can't wait. Yeah, DeCorian Moore is he's going to be special. We're looking forward to that, especially with the Stewart injury. Justice Mosqueda covers the NFL, covers the Green Bay Packers, Acme Packing Company, SB Nation, at Jew Mosk on the socials, JUMOSQ on the socials. Dude, I've wanted to catch up with you for a long time, so I appreciate you accommodating this and entertaining us for a few moments here in Portland and you're local. Let's talk some ball again soon, my friend.
Yes, sir. Yeah, whenever you need me.
That was Justice Mosqueda. Good stuff with him. It's just, I appreciate the more forward conversation, you know, more data and more insights into film and the way that the younger, I think, media watch the game of football and break it down. There's value in that. So more of those conversations, the better. Thanks to Justice Mosqueda for jumping on the show here. That will do it for us on a busy Thursday. Thanks to Mike Hass for joining us earlier. Beavs legend, College Football Hall of Famer. You can find that podcast if you missed it. He had some interesting takes on the Civil War rivalry series with Oregon and whether or not he wants to see that played every year. Spoiler, he's not a fan. He doesn't care for it. He doesn't need the Beavs and Ducks to be playing each other anymore now that Oregon left Oregon State in the dust a couple of years ago. And now Beavers, though, just like Mike Hass was in his playing career, resilient, won't take no for an answer. Kick the door down with your opportunity, get off the mat, keep fighting again, and leave the results on the field. He had some good thoughts on that. He was close with Trent Bray, had some good thoughts on Bray as well. So conversations with Mike Hass, Justice Mosqueda, and the full show you can find on the podcast as well. Going to be a fun Friday. Mariners made a big trade. That breaking news, Josh Naylor from the Diamondbacks, he's now a Seattle Mariner. So we'll talk about that as well on tomorrow's show. Judah Newby here on the Bald-Faced Truth, 750 The Game and the BFT Radio Network.